now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time, and welcome to another episode of Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. In fact, reclaiming that which you have always been. Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I just invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show, I just invite you to call in toll-free line 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you like to give me your insights or comments or thoughts on today's subject, blessing the through, the vehicles of forgiveness, gratitude, and love. Blessing the through. We're very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I'd just like to say welcome to the show. And we've had some exciting things going on the past couple of weeks, especially this past week where we turned the clocks ahead, this past Sunday, and hopefully that didn't throw everybody. For me, I felt a little lethargic on Sunday, but come Monday, I got my old energy back and I feel pretty good. So certainly where I am in the world, it got up to 70 degrees today and sunny. So I know next week, next Wednesday, actually, the 20th, is going to be the first day of spring. So things are looking up, definitely, definitely. And speaking about things coming up this Sunday, the 17th, is St. Patrick's Day. So those of you who are Irish or would just like to be Irish for that day, you know, that is your holiday, St. Patrick's Day. So everybody, please, please, please drink responsibly, you know, and just have a good time, celebrate, you know, but don't go drinking and driving. So anyway, welcome aboard to those who are, you know, tuning in for the very first time, and just want to kind of just give an overview of what Reclaiming Authenticity is all about. And just want to begin by just saying that each and every other week, you know, these broadcasts are certainly dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I often share with my clients my own personal philosophy of how and why I work with people the way that I do. It's kind of like my way of introducing myself to clients that I agree to counsel for the very first time. And I share with them that, it comes from two deep-seated beliefs within me, you know, just how I am and how I work with people and why I work with people the way that I do. It comes from those two deep-seated beliefs. And the first belief is that I truly believe that people have the answers within themselves. In other words, meaning that they know the kind of life they want to live and what brings you happiness, let's say, and joy and peace and contentment, and you know what doesn't. And two, I believe that from the moment we are born and then some, we have everything we need in this life in terms of our talents, our skills, our giftedness, our graces, our personalities, our strengths, and so on and so forth. And yet, there are times in our lives that we go through some pretty trying experiences or even horrific experiences, such as when we just find ourselves being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And let's say we suffer some traumatic experience, Or maybe we struggle with making the same mistakes or bad habits, over and over and over again that we have never properly dealt with or we have never properly healed from. Or let's say we struggle to make sense out of our issues that have been handed down through our family line. I'll say more about that later on in the second half of the show tonight. But nevertheless, these issues and the pain that they often entail often keeps us from living the life we want to live, as well as they often keep the very best of ourselves coming out. Because society still has this message out there that if you want to find the best of who you are, look outward, look at the externals, compare yourself to others, strive for excellence by finding out how other people do it, and then you copy that. Well, that's not the way to do it. Okay, because when we do those things, we often live our lives from a place of woundedness and pain and victimization instead of a place of healing and wholeness and love. And certainly looking within to find not just everything that we brought into this world, let's say, the very best parts of ourselves, but we also look inward in order to find who we are truly as souls. Because it is ironic that we often, as we go through life, we receive our deepest emotional and psychological and physical and even spiritual woundedness as a result of being in relationships with one another. And whether this wounding was intentional or maybe it was accidental, it's often what we do afterwards, once we have been wounded, or that, let's say, we have wounded another person. That will either reinforce those wounds or perhaps find a way to be healed and be free from those burdens. So it's certainly what we do afterwards that makes all the difference in the world. And yet, in order to find our healing, we need to be in healthier relationships in order to be able to heal from damaged emotions or, let's say, wounded spirits and a lack of emotional and psychological support. Because the author Park says in his book From Hurt to Healing, he says that when people's deep wounds are not healed, these wounds become vortexes of many troubled waters, and they're intertwined with their own instinct of survival and fear, which keeps many people victimized. And many victims instinctively synchronize their wavelengths with offenders. In other words, we may even bond with those who have hurt us. And, or I should say, people may even internalize a perpetrator's images and values and externalize them in treating their own victims. So, in short, they see the world through their oppressor's eyes, but yet, seeing again through their own eyes begins the healing process. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts, we may have similar skills or talents or similar strengths or character traits, no two people express these identically. In other words, each of us has a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. We can try, and we can imitate how others do things, but really no one has the ability to duplicate us, because within us is what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hachaetos, a thisness, a uniqueness to us, if you will. Or as I explain it to the kids and teenagers I counsel, like, we all have a thumbprint. Everybody has one. No two are alike. And that's our uniqueness. That's our thisness. That's our hachaetos. And therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. But unfortunately, millions of people have never had the chance to discover their uniqueness, because we're often told to look in all the wrong places, like I said. We're told to look for that thisness in the externals, or let's say, the accumulation of things or accomplishments or even the accolades. But this is not where our thisness and uniqueness and hachaetas is to be found. Instead, this full expression of who we are is to be found within the deep realization and full experiences with ourselves as soul. And yet, what often presents a huge challenge to this realization often comes when we experience, these deepest wounds, the physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. And unfortunately, when we do experience these things, we don't recognize our uniqueness or our thisness. We may tend to want to hide that giftedness or that what makes us special. We may give up and give in to the labels and stereotypes that others want us to be for them so that they feel good about themselves. Or we push our giftedness way down so that others cannot see it. And we kind of lose track of, well, just where did it go? Or perhaps we were told that we would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us as we were growing up that there's really nothing special to us. But these are all lies. And ironically, these relationships where we experience, these deep wounds just might be within our own families. They could be among coworkers. They could be found in the institutions where we work or play or whatever, and even among friends. We assume that, let's say, the people who are supposed to love us the most might be the ones who hurt us because of their unhealed wounds and their underdeveloped selves. But still, all is not lost because there is power in seeking healing. There's power in inner transformation and the direct realization of ourselves as soul. Because when we transform, we're also going to transform others by our presence, by our grace, by our understanding. But first and foremost, forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because, and you've heard me say this many times on this show, because whenever we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be even be more compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with somebody else. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, I guarantee we then will discover how this opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are truly able to know ourselves as a soul, that eternal, vast soul, and live from our soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others, for them to see themselves as soul. So, yeah, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. In fact, it can be summed up in one word, namaste, which roughly translated means, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Well, welcome to the middle of March. We are here, March 13th. The year is just flying by. And I just wanted to start off this broadcast by just asking you a question out there. How many of you dream? It may not be every night, but how many of you dream? How many of you remember your dreams and so forth? Well, of course, we all do. It's part of a normal state of consciousness. We have actually three states of consciousness. We have the waking state, we have the deep sleep state, and then we have the dreaming state. And all of these different states are consciousness, yet they're also part of an overall consciousness, whereby a higher level of consciousness actually bears witness to these various states. As we who are souls, we can observe when we're in a waking state or a deep sleep state or even a dreaming state. And still, there are times when our dreams are very vivid and contain specific messages or themes for us to consider, especially if they are repetitive. For example, the Swiss psychiatrist, I'm sure you've heard of him, Carl Jung, was often fond of telling a story about a patient of his who started to have a very specific dream pattern where she was waist deep in a pit filled with filthy, stinking sewage and fire. And the more she struggled to free herself, the more she sank deeper and deeper and deeper. Now, in her dream, she constantly called out to Dr. Jung, who was silently standing on the bank watching her. "Help me out, Dr. Jung, help me out." But Dr. Jung did nothing but watch. And just before she was about to go under the hallway, she would wake up. And it seemed as though night after night she had this dream with no reply from Dr. Jung. Until one night, the outcome of her dream changed. Her original dream started out the same way, with her being in this pit filled with stinking waste and fire. And she continued to struggle to free herself, as always, and she continued to call out to Dr. Jung to help her out of this pit. But this time in her dream, she was struggling even harder to get out. But she was also sinking faster and faster this time, and by now, only one shoulder was visible. And she said that Dr. Jung finally reached out with his foot and pushed her the whole way under and said to her, "Not out, but through." Not out, but through. And Jung interpreted this dream as his patient doing some very excellent inner work and continued to encourage her to face her issues, no matter how painful they are, instead of wanting to be rescued from these painful memories. Not out, but through. You know, this story from Dr. Jung's journals demonstrates that his patient was really no different from any of us who have faced difficult memories or traumatic pasts. You know, we too may be tempted to want to get out of a situation as quickly and painless as possible, only to discover that to find true inner healing, that we must embrace the through, not out, but through. And yet, how do we do this? Well, we actually have three specific vehicles, let's say, which show us the way through, namely forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And although many people believe, and treat these characteristics, forgiveness, gratitude, and love separately, they actually work in tandem with one another, signifying how our healing can best be found in removing everything that gets in our way of discovering who we truly are as souls, namely unforgiveness, bitterness, contempt for others, and every other example of negative and victimized thinking that keeps us and others mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually wounded. And finding our healing through the pain by forgiveness and walking in gratitude and expressing unconditional love is always the first step. Carl Rogers, who was also a psychiatrist and founder of person-centered therapy, once said that when another person is hurting or confused or troubled or anxious or alienated or terrified, or when he or she is doubtful of self-worth, that they're uncertain as to identity, then understanding is called for. for this gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance provides illumination and healing. And in such situations, he said, deep understanding is, I believe, the most precious gift one can give to another. And this is how we bless the through. We heal ourselves, we heal others. We forgive ourselves, we forgive others. We live in gratitude with ourselves, we live in gratitude with everyone. And when we love ourselves, we can truly love others. Well, with the weather becoming nicer and nicer, and you know, I see more and more people getting out and walking. And one of the best forms of exercise we can do, as the experts say, apart from rock climbing and surfing and mountain biking, you know, is to go for a nice long walk or whatever else you're into. And most people I know enjoy a good long walk or a hike through the woods or the forest, you know, wherever your feet take you, let's say. And no matter whether we're on a trail or a back road, we sometimes pick up a pebble in our shoe. I mean, it's inevitable sometimes. Like, we can't go anywhere without picking up a stone. And think about it. You know, you're moving along at a pretty good pace. You know, things are peaceful and hopefully no pain in the hips and the knees. When all of a sudden, you feel a pain in the bottom of your foot and you realize somehow you picked up a pebble. You picked up a small stone. Now, your first thought, this might be to ignore it. I mean, after all, this might be an annoyance that you can tolerate. And let's be honest, let's say we don't really want to stop and take off our shoe and get rid of the pebble. So we often tell ourselves, I got this. I can handle this. You know, just I can make it. It's not too much further. But as we continue on, you know, we might even start to shake our foot to shift the pebble to another area under our foot that we can tolerate for now. And the pebble is still in our shoe, but now we've taken some action to minimize the pain that we feel, or so we think. But over time, and with the more steps that we take, the pain begins to intensify. And, you know, if it gets too bad, we may even bleed into our own sock because of where the pebble had been rubbing. And when finally we can no longer tolerate the pain and no longer keep shifting the pebble back and forth inside the shoe, we finally stop, take off the shoe, and shake the pebble free. Well, I tell you what, let's stay with this pebble as a metaphor for something far greater than a pain in the foot, okay? Because isn't it amazing what kind of bigger lesson a little pebble in the shoe can teach us? Let's just say for tonight, what if we begin to see everything in our lives as a metaphor, such as, you know, a physical pain just might teach us something about our emotional pain or even our spiritual pain. Because you see, a pebble in the shoe, and if we're aware of this, just might awaken us to something else we need to take care of in our lives. In fact, the pebble just might remind us of something that's even more painful for us, but that nobody knows about. So it might teach us that we always need to deal with our problems immediately, that it's never going to heal if we don't do something about it. Or are we hanging on to problems which have now turned into anger and bitterness and unforgiveness? But let's go a little bit deeper. Let's say, you know, this pebble in the shoe metaphor, you know, let's say it points to a real issue, and why we don't want to forgive is perhaps that we really want to keep ourselves protected from further wounding because we don't want to let our guard down again and again. I had once read, you know, Muhammad Ali once said that it isn't the mountains ahead to climb that wears you out. It's the pebble in your shoe. I mean, and this is advice from a man that achieved greatness, but only after overcoming many challenges growing up as a young black man in an era that was riddled with racial discrimination. And another way to look at what forgiveness entails can actually come as a shock to many, and that is that forgiveness very much has to do with ourselves. It is about self-healing, self-empowerment, and self-liberation. As Desmond Tutu, he was South Africa's former Anglican Archbishop and recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, he once said that we don't forgive to exclusively help the other person. We don't forgive solely for others. We forgive, for ourselves. Forgiveness is, in other words, the best form of self-interest. Now, according to a survey by the Fetzer Institute, 62% of Americans think that they need more forgiveness in their personal lives. But how do people go about finding forgiveness, let alone walking in a state of forgiveness? Well, I want to read just a short passage from the book From Hurt to Healing by Andrew Clark. And he writes that forgiveness is close to our daily life. To forgive or to be forgiven is important to everyday life. And yet, we find it hard to be comfortable with either of them. Forgiveness is indeed a gift to yourself. If you don't forgive a grudge, then there's a part of you that dies inside. You lose your optimism, you lose your enthusiasm, and you lose your zest for life. Now, I know what some of you are thinking out there, because I had these thoughts too. Oh, so I get hurt and you want me to forgive the offender? You don't understand. I'm the one that got hurt. The offender should do something for me. Okay, but this kind of thinking really traps victims in their pain and offers no plausible solution, especially if offenders, let's say, don't realize that they did something wrong. Or even if they do, they just don't feel like making amends. And this situation seems almost intractable, but it locks people who have gone through some pretty horrific things. You know, it just locks them into a space filled with hurt. And carrying this hurt eventually becomes this burden to a person's, let's say, their social, their physical, even mental well-being. But it's forgiveness that eases this and is not surprisingly linked, and not surprisingly, is linked to improved health and quality of life. So in other words, we feel better too. Now, ironically, people's beliefs about forgiveness, or even their beliefs about, let's say, religion and spirituality, may actually hinder their ability to forgive. In fact, you might even discover that the concept of forgiveness can be actually incorporated into multiple beliefs, such as, let's say, you ask yourself what forgiveness looks like to you as a means of connecting forgiveness to your overall belief system. I mean, where does forgiveness fit in? And how does forgiveness show up in your relationships and your own well-being? Or maybe you assume that forgiving another person is equivalent to pardoning them and or condoning, you know, the offense that injured you. It's not necessarily the case, because people are to be held accountable for their actions. But forgiveness also releases yourself and others from having to carry around an emotional wound that often turns into bitterness, if not work through. Well, I would really be interested in what's on your heart regarding this subject, blessing the through. And if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. You are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And earlier in the show, I was talking about just how we may struggle with difficult memories or traumatic pasts. And honestly, we just might be tempted. We want to get out of a situation as quickly or as painless as possible. Only to discover that in order to find just a deep, true inner healing, we have to embrace the through. You know, not out, but through. And how do we do this? Well, we actually have three specific vehicles, is what I like to call them, which show us the way through, namely forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And as I said before in the first half of the show, although many people believe these characteristics as separate from one another, they actually work in tandem with one another and signifying how our healing can best be found in removing everything that gets in our way of discovering who we are truly are as souls, namely unforgiveness. We need to get rid of that. Bitterness. We need to work through that. Contempt for others. Where is that coming from? And every other example of negative and victimized thinking that keeps us and others mentally, emotionally, physically, and even spiritually wounded. So finding our healing through the pain by forgiveness or walking in gratitude and expressing unconditional love is always the first step. Now, in addition to many spiritual practices and rituals out there, I know many people are today engaged in meditation in one form or another in order to find their healing, their grace, and peace within themselves. And the Buddhist Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, who had recently passed, he once said that meditation, the key to understanding meditation, I should say, is not to get out of society, but to prepare us for re-entry into society. And this is what is called engaged Buddhism, because he says that whenever we go to a meditation center, we may have the impression that we leave everything behind. We'll leave our family, we'll leave society, and all the complications involved with them. And we come as an individual in order to practice and search for peace. But he says this is already an illusion, because in Buddhism, there is no such thing as an individual. Engaged Buddhism. Meditation is not to get out of society, but to prepare us to re-enter into society. Well, what if we begin to see everything in our lives as a metaphor, as I said earlier, you know, such as whenever we have a physical ache or pain? I wonder, just by focusing on that, what it just might teach us about say some deeper emotional wounds or deeper mental wounds or even our spiritual pain that we have experienced. Well, this past week, I've had some pretty intriguing conversations with kids and teenagers about forgiveness. And interestingly enough, the conversations all have centered on the theme of video games. Of course, kids, they're going to talk about what they know best, video games. And unfortunately, many times video games are not always seen as ways to teach kids about the real lessons of life. Yet everything is a teachable moment for us. Remember, everything is a metaphor. Okay. So, for instance, in a video game, you're trying to reach an end or a goal, whether it's getting to a finish line or reaching the top of a mountain or trying to find a hidden treasure, whatever the game is about. And most of the time, it takes several attempts to succeed on a certain level that you're on. Or maybe, in other words, no one person playing the game has ever reached the goal of the game without making a few mistakes along the way and then having to start over. And therein lies life's lessons about forgiveness. Because when we forgive or when we ask another for forgiveness, it's like we've been given another chance to start over with ourselves or start over with others, even start over with God. Forgiveness allows us to re-enter society a little bit wiser, a little bit more engaged in living in gratitude, because we know how much we have been forgiven. And yet, unforgiveness causes us often to withdraw from others. So, how many of you out there in internet radio land have ever tied a braid? Okay, now I'll give you a moment to answer. How many of you have ever tied a braid? Perhaps some of you have tied your hair in a braid, or maybe you've even braided sweetgrass. Maybe you braided ribbons for a little flair on packages or decorations. Either way, we know that braiding something makes it strong because of the intertwining of the fibers and the strands. Well, I was reminded of this truth when I was at the hardware store last month and I was buying some clothesline rope. And of course, you have to go down the aisle where they have the rope, and there's all kinds of ropes, different thicknesses and lengths and so forth. And I stopped and I looked at some of the heavier and thicker ropes that they had there. And I discovered that the strength of a rope was actually in the weaving or the braiding of other strands or pieces of rope, which of course made it very strong. A rope of, say three strands woven together is very strong, right? And just keeping this in mind, we can apply this same analogy or a metaphor to our lives, especially when it comes to forgiveness and gratitude. Most of the time, society, as I said, wants to treat these themes separate. However, when it comes to integrating our spirituality and our mental health, forgiveness and gratitude can never be separated. Oh, we could turn this into a which came first, chicken or the egg dilemma. But in all actuality, I've never met a person who didn't express gratitude in all that they do and say, without also having forgiveness in their heart. You just can't separate the two, because where you have one, you have the other. I mean, if you want, I mean, forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand, just like peanut butter and jelly or peas and carrots. Okay? Because when we both have forgiveness and gratitude, it really opens up our hearts like nothing else in our lives and allows a very authentic love of ourselves and a love for others to emerge. So, how do we go about cultivating this forgiveness, gratitude, and love in our everyday life? Well, it's Kind of easy, but the process may be a little difficult, right? So let's say, we have to begin with the most difficult people we may have ever encountered in our lives, our family. Yeah, you heard right. You begin with the most difficult people you may have ever encountered, your family. Start right there. You want to cultivate forgiveness, gratitude, and love? Begin with your family. And forgiveness and gratitude has to begin with our families, because this is often where we've experienced some of the most pain and hurt in our lives. Psychological, emotional, physical, even spiritual pain. I say this at the beginning of every broadcast. We have to begin with our family of origin issues, because these are the first people who gave us a sense of how the world works. They taught us about attachment styles. Do we feel safe when we're being held? Is it warm? Is it unnerving? Is it downright uncomfortable? And why is that? And so on and so forth. But I just want to take a moment and just I just want to expand a definition of family here, okay, to include not just our immediate and extended family members, but I also want to include family members that have gone on before us, as well as those who will come after us, okay? And if you've been listening to me for some time, I'm all about intergenerational trauma. So we have to bring in the, extended families who have lived well before us, as well as, seeing our connection to those who are going to come after us. And it's actually the family systems theorist Murray Bowen who suggested that a person cannot be fully understood in isolation. In other words, apart from the greater context of one's family or community or culture and the world. And yet, within these larger systems, let's say, people struggle to differentiate themselves and to be, I want to be guided by my own thoughts, my own feelings, my own actions. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. But still, we are honest with ourselves. We may live in a part of the world where society's definition of differentiation is a mixed message. For example, this is what I mean. On one hand, differentiation is often taken to the extreme, as we're told to, well, you got to look out for number one. You got to be an individual. You got to walk to the beat of your own drum, even at the expense of others, if necessary. And yet, on the other hand, there are times when we are also expected to go with the flow. Don't make waves. Fall in line with the status quo. But how often then are we content to keep walking with that pebble in our shoe, knowing that with each step that we take, this pain is going to keep shooting through our feet and eventually up our leg? But in thinking about ancestral healing, we might even be hesitant to begin this process because we may still hold a tremendous amount of bitterness, rage, and contempt against those who committed physical, emotional, even sexual abuse against us or others within our family. In fact, as we flip through our family photo albums or even, scan through our phones, we may discover that they're not always filled with pleasant memories. Instead, the pages, the photographs, may be filled with more memories of abuse and control and oppression and cruelty. But nevertheless, when we realize that we can be the transitional generation that no longer has to carry such wounds, then, well, our ancestors no longer have to carry them either. Because we all possess inner strengths, we all possess resources, and we all possess gifts to make this happen. And yeah, it's true. Wounded people wound people. because intergenerational trauma attests to this. Dude, just look through history and you'll see intergenerational trauma being handed down and reinforced over and over and over again. And yet, people who live their lives in forgiveness, gratitude, and love transform generations. I'll say that again. People who live their lives in forgiveness, gratitude, and love transform generations. And discovering the power of your soul's voice is a tremendous catalyst for change. So, I tell you what, say for the next few days, and for that matter, the next few weeks, next few months, next few years, be particularly mindful to journal any insights or impressions or dreams that arise. Make note of any changes in your perspectives regarding your present relationships. Just exactly how do you now view yourself and others? In what ways do you treat yourself or others differently? And how do others appear to treat you? In what ways are you more understanding and loving and compassionate and forgiving and more patient with yourself and others? And more importantly, when it comes to intergenerational trauma, have you noticed how you tell your family stories the same old way or from a much healed, different, healthier perspective? See, in creating what I would call a living dialogue with our ancestors, remember that our soul connection with them is not about placing blame or finding fault for wounds suffered from intergenerational trauma. Instead, it is a dialogue. It's a living dialogue intended to create this ongoing opportunity for healing and reconciliation, as well as stopping, the harmful psychological, emotional, and spiritual patterns from being passed on to generations who have yet to be born. Because once we claim that, yes, I am part of a transitional generation, it requires us to stand in the gap, as it were, and offer release, not just for ourselves, to offer healing, not just for ourselves, but also for all family members, regardless of whether or not they were perpetrators or victims. And again, by that I mean, I have friends who can set their intention to heal intergenerational trauma from the perspective of the unborn generations. So much like going back seven generations to heal souls that are stuck due to trauma, they actually place themselves in the role or the voice of seven generations into the future. And yet, many people ask me, well, how do you heal intergenerational trauma when you don't even know your present family, let alone connect with your ancestors and those who have yet to be born? We don't know them. So how do we heal this trauma? And the answer is that a lot of people use religious and social ceremonies or rituals that actually bring us back into a spiritual and psychological, emotional, and physical alignment or awareness, let's say, with God, with ourselves, and our relations. That no matter what nationality or race or ethnicity or region we're from, every culture has its own unique celebrations. And many ceremonies mark transitions in our lives, such as graduations and weddings and funerals. And others are more, let's say, seasonal and follow a yearly observance, such as celebrations of birthdays or anniversaries or holidays or solstice celebrations, the one that's coming up here next week in the beginning of spring. But regardless of when a particular ceremony is observed or whether or not people are connected to their communities, there's always universal teachings, often hidden in the rituals, that can be applied to all of humanity. So, in the time that's remaining, I just want to share with you a little bit about my story and how I've used a ritual to really bring about healing. And, just generations and generations that have gone on before me. With my father, he and I could have had a much better relationship, let's say. He has been dead for 38 years now, and there's not a day goes by that I don't think about him. And as I said, we had our moments, but we just never really hit it off. We could have been a lot closer, but for one reason or another, it didn't happen. And I grew up just very bitter. He died when I was 20. And I refused to put out pictures. I just refused any of his knickknacks or jewelry. I just, no, I'll hang on to that stuff, but no, I'm not gonna, delve into any of that stuff. And the longer I held on to that bitterness, the more it was hurting me. Until I realized, one day it's time to heal. And I had to get out those pictures. Pictures of, him and my mother and, putting them out around the house and everything. And I tell you, that created the most wonderful energy shift in the home. I mean, I could feel it right away. It was an acknowledgement. And it was, in a sense, I was saying, I'm ready to forgive. I'm ready to be forgiven. I'm ready to live in gratitude with my father. I'm ready to love him unconditionally, and so on and so forth. And a key component to this, which really brought it home for me, was his ring. He has a just a very beautiful black onyx ring with a very, very tiny, tiny diamond in the center. And it was in a jewelry box, and I knew where it was. I just refused to get it out, and let alone refusing to wear it. But the time was right. I was ready to heal. I was ready to be forgiven. I was ready to forgive, and so forth. So I got the ring out, and I just did simple, just prayers of forgiveness and gratitude, and just I want to love him and really make amends. And I had to then, just in my own way, kind of, let's say, cleanse the ring of, any kind of negative energy or negative thoughts that I associated with his ring. And eventually, after some time, when I thought the time was right, took it to a jeweler and, had it cleaned. I had it resized, and I now wear it on my right hand, my right ring finger, my right hand. And again, the energy, the positive energy that came through in this reconciliation between myself and my father and on back through the paternal family line was just incredible. Because you see, it's what I've been saying all along. With our prayers, we want to say, give me this, give me that, give me this, give me that. When in a sense, maybe our prayers would be more effective if we say, you know what? Take away my bitterness. Take away my pain. Take away my confusion. Take away my stubbornness. Take away everything that hinders my walk. Take away everything that clouds my vision of seeing myself clearly as a vast soul. And there's much more to the story that I can have to share at another time. But I will have to say that, there are many ways that we bless the through. And, we do go through some pretty horrific and just gut-wrenching experiences. But we have the vehicles to get us through. Forgiveness, gratitude, and love. These three things transforms lives. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And if for some reason you had to, pop in and out and you want to get the full broadcast, you can go on to the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And once you get to that website, you can just click on where the archives are, and you can pull up either tonight's broadcast or another episode that which you had missed, weeks ago or even months ago. So Until we talk again, everybody be safe, be happy. Those of you who are celebrating St. Patrick's Day, do it responsibly. And everybody be safe, everybody behave themselves, and everybody be blessed. Night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to reclaimingauthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on PBS Radio TV.